आभिद्रवति माम ईशा शरस्तप्ताय सो विभो खामं दहतु मम नाता मामे गर्भो निपत्यतम।
Buddha said, O Lord of Lords, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. O my Lord, you are all-powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast. My Lord, let it burn me personally, if you so desire. But please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This incident took place after the death of Abhimanyu, the husband of Uttara. Abhimanyu's widow, Uttara, should have followed the path of her husband, but because she was pregnant and Maharaj Parikshit, a great devotee of the Lord, was lying in the embryo, she was responsible for his protection. The mother of a child has a great responsibility in giving all protection to the child. And therefore, Uttara was not ashamed to express this frankly before Lord Krishna. Uttara was the daughter of a great king, the wife of a great hero, and student of a great devotee. And later, she was the mother of a good king also. She was fortunate in every respect. You are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast. My Lord, let it burn me personally, if you so desire. But please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. We are here reading of the great and relentless enmity of Ashwatthama for the great devotees, the Pandavas. As well as the Pandavas' willingness with great faith and devotion to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even despite one terrible crisis after another. Sometimes people think that when they become a devotee, materially everything in their life becomes very smooth, harmonious, and in order. That may be the case, but also it may not be the case. Because Krishna allows to come into our life whatever is ultimately necessary for us to go through to truly enrich our consciousness and take shelter of Him. But of course, when the tribulations of life come upon us, we have the free choice whether we humble ourselves with faith and take shelter of Krishna in that situation, or whether, due to our egoistic conceptions, we take shelter of various material facilities and give up our trust in the supreme perfection of Krishna and in the path of devotion. See what the Pandavas are going through, one condition after another. When they were young, just children, their father died, Pandu, an untimely death. And then, being brought up under the direction of Bhishma in the Kuru palaces, they had to undergo so much prejudice from Dhritarashtra, who was temporarily taking the position of king, and Duryodhana. They were fed poison. They were placed into a house of lack with the attempt of murdering them all by burning them to death. They were cheated in a dice match. Everything was taken away from them. Their wife was almost embarrassed in front of all of the heroes of the Kuru dynasty. They were banished to the forest. In the forest, so many rakshasas were trying to destroy them. So much humiliation Duryodhana was inflicting upon them. During the last year, they had to hide themselves. The greatest emperors of the world and kings had to disguise themselves, one as a eunuch dancing teacher, Arjuna, dancing teacher for young princess, Uttara, one as a cook, Bhima, one as a cowherd boy, one taking care of the horses, and one as an advisor to the king. And then, after their banishment was complete, Duryodhana continued his prejudice against them, would not even give them even a single village to rule over, and the battle of Kurukshetra had to take place. And in that battlefield, the beloved son of Arjuna, Abhimanyu, who was equally loved by all of his brothers, was killed unfairly. And then just after the war, the five sons of the Pandavas, all born of Draupadi, through Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev. They were all brutally murdered when they were sleeping. And then, when chasing after the Avenger, Ashwatthama, a massive Brahmastra, attacked all of them. Of course, again they turned to Krishna and he saved them. In every situation, they simply turn to Krishna. And here we find that right before all of their eyes, the only surviving descendant of the Pandavas, life was about to be destroyed. Already through unfair means, Abhimanyu and the five children of Draupadi were killed. The only one left was Abhimanyu's son. Uttara was a widow, Abhimanyu's wife. She was carrying his child in her womb. And Ashwatthama was so relentless in his desire to seek revenge to the Pandavas that he wouldn't give up under any condition of life. He had already been severely humiliated and punished for his last offense, but still he was determined to destroy the Pandavas. according to his capacity. So it is actually quite wonderful. The power of Maya and the power of devotional service or bhakti. A materialistic person, we see, however many obstacles may come in his path, because of his desire to fulfill his egoistic purposes, he has such incredible determination, is willing to fight so fearlessly just to fulfill his material motivations. Sometimes we are astonished in this world by how materialistic people can strive so hard. For what? We see how, even here in the city of Bombay, what people are willing to do just for a few rupees. In some places, people are willing to carry massive, massive loads of weight on their backs or on their heads just for a few rupees, day and night. Going up and down mountains on rickshaws for a few rupees without ever giving up. And then we see how some businessmen, how they are so willing, even after so much terrible bankruptcy and so much opposition, they are just willing to fight and fight and fight no matter what to somehow establish their good name and fame and make some profits. And politicians, even at the risk of their life, when people are threatening to kill them, even when their party is devastated in elections and all sorts of defame and all sorts of blasphemy and criticism and exposures of their vices coming out, still they fight so hard, they spend so much money, they risk everything just to get back into office. For what? And how soldiers, just for the sake of national pride, they're willing to go into a battlefield and become terribly injured and wounded and still keep fighting and fighting and fighting at the risk of death without cessation. Sometimes we think, what type of determination? But this is the power of Maya. Maya is empowering these people with such enthusiasm to never give up. We see that materialistic people, sometimes those who are great materialists, even at the point of death, they'll never give up their pursuit. And it is a great wonder. And such people, they are recognized, honored, and even worshipped by other materialistic people, because they are factually empowered with this incredible determination by the material energy, by Maya. And they never give up. Even atheists, some atheists, they will argue and perform so many tremendous campaigns to somehow or other defy religion and defy God. Even to the point of death, they'll never give up their convictions. So Ashwatthama, he was so angry with the death of his father, Dronacharya, that this anger created such an envy, such a vengeful mood in his heart. And according to your desire, Krishna empowers you, whether you're a devotee or whether you're a materialistic person. Prakrite krayamanani gunai karamani saravasha ahankara vimudhatma karataham iti manyate. That the bewildered spirit soul thinks himself to be the doer of his activities, but actually they're being carried out by nature. Maya vyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachana. And it is Krishna who is directing and controlling material nature, and no one else. So ultimately, Krishna is empowering everyone according to their desires, either directly through his divine spiritual potency, Yogamaya, or through his material potency, or Mahamaya. According to our desire, our aspiration in life, Krishna reciprocates by giving us a particular intelligence, a particular determination, a particular strength to pursue our ambitions. Krishna is the strength of the strong. Krishna is the intelligence of the intelligent. Krishna is the ultimate doer of everything that is happening. But the jivatma, tathashta, shakti, the individual soul, is given the free will to desire and aspire, and accordingly Krishna empowers us. Because factually we should know that we have no strength, we have no means to fulfill any desire unless Krishna personally or through his material energies empowers us to do so. If we want something to eat, even a baby child, Krishna empowers us to pick up the food with the hand. Krishna empowers us to chew it with our teeth. Krishna empowers it to digest us, to digest it. It is all happening by Krishna's arrangement through material energy. So here we find that Ashwatthama, due to his uncontrolled mind, he was not willing to logically or rationally analyze his father's situation, Dronacharya. People become so blind because of material attachment. He was attached that this is my father. And he was blind to all the atrocities that his father had performed. Duryodhana tried to unfairly murder the Pandavas on so many occasions. Totally cheated them. Utterly tried to disgrace them in every possible way. And Dronacharya was supporting them the whole time, Duryodhana. And in the battle of Kurukshetra, he was breaking all the rules and regulations possible to try to destroy the Pandavas' army when they were fighting for righteousness and for Krishna. And he was on the side of adharma, or sin, irreligion. But he did not recognize that. And he was ultimately killed unfairly. But he only saw that my father was killed unfairly. He was blind to see the reality of the whole condition of why. Love is blind in this material world. Spiritual love is based on knowledge and truth. But materialistic love, love is not centered on Krishna consciousness, is blind. It is an illusion. It is ignorance. And here we see to what an extent it can be an illusion. So Ashwatthama was so hurt by his ego was so disturbed by how his father was killed, that even though the Pandavas were directly protected by Krishna himself, he was still vowed to destroy them. He knew that he had no power to destroy the Pandavas themselves. So he wanted to destroy their innocent, helpless offspring. He tried. He killed the five children sleeping. And Arjuna captured him and tied him with ropes and threw him on the ground. And he could have easily killed him. But by the grace of Draupadi and Krishna, he was saved. He deserved to die. He was captured. And he was on the verge of death. But out of the forgiving nature of the Pandavas, he was released. And what did he do after that? He wanted to kill the last surviving child in the womb by sending a Brahmastra, such a mighty, terrible weapon that could actually destroy this entire planet within a second. And he targeted the most dangerous and fearful of all weapons toward an innocent, helpless child within the womb. Such incredible determination he was empowered with. So we should not be in the illusion to think that materialistic people who have strong, strong desires will ever necessarily give up their envious and sinful ways. Krishna comes to give them the chance, to give them the opportunity, but ultimately, as we see here, he will empower them according to the choice they make in so many wonderful ways. Some people just won't give up. It's unbelievable. Even when everything is against them, when everything's been taken away, they just won't give up. Anyways, the Pandavas were even more determined in not giving up in their devotional spirit. Through so many tragedies, through so many crises, so many utterly heartbreaking experiences, so many reversals, they never gave up humbly taking shelter of Krishna. They never gave up their faith. Imagine in your own life, if your child was murdered unfairly, five of your children or brother's children were murdered when they were sleeping, everything was taken away from you, you were being humiliated, blasphemed again and again and again, one crisis after another. And Queen Kunti, who was so lovingly and motherly disposed toward everyone, she had to undergo the greatest suffering by seeing all of this happening. And yet, if you were in that situation, would you doubt, is Krishna really God? Is there a God? Why is this happening to me? What have I done? Of course, we are basically all coming from very sinful backgrounds. So there is some material logic to why we would have to suffer so many terrible conditions of life. But Kunti and Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, they had never even thought of a sinful activity in their whole life. They were the very emblems of Dharma and truthfulness and piety and love. There was no logic or reason behind any of this happening to them by the material laws. It was not a matter of karma. For people like us, we obviously deserve so many terrible karmic reactions. For us, Krishna is so merciful that when we do suffer, he's just minimizing it to the bare minimum just to give us a sample of what we really deserve. But the Pandavas deserved nothing. And yet, so many tragedies and crises taking place in their life. one after another. Sometimes when there's a crisis in our life, when it's over with, we think, it's over with. Now everything's all right. But for the Pandavas, as soon as one crisis was over with, almost immediately there was another tragedy, another terrible condition by which they had no other alternative but to just surrender to Krishna. But through all of this, did they ever question their faith that Krishna is their protector? And how? Even when Krishna allowed Abhimanyu and these five little babies to be, not babies, these five teenage boys to be killed, did they ever question, why didn't Krishna protect them? Why should I surrender to Krishna? What type of protection is this? Never. They had such faith. They had such devotion. They were not expecting, like businessmen, that Krishna, I'm your devotee, now you will make everything so materially wonderful for me to enjoy. Rather, they accepted whatever came. And with even more determination than Ashwatthama to fulfill his material motives, the Pandavas and Kunti Devi and Draupadi, no matter what happened in this world, they always turned to Krishna with pure, unalloyed faith and devotion. Vyavasayatmaka buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahushaka hinantascha buddhayo vyavasayanam. Those who are on this path, their aim is one, they're resolute in purpose. And what is that aim? What is that resolution? That Krishna is my only shelter. That Krishna is my only goal in life. And a devotee never gives up this determination, no matter what happens in this world. And we should know that the Pandavas were actually liberated souls. Why did they go through all of this? They went through so many of these conditions of life just to show an example to all of us of the type of faith, the type of unflinching determination we must have in our Krishna consciousness. Pure devotional service is that condition by which we are not expecting something wonderful from Krishna on a material level. We are willing to suffer and die for Krishna if it is his will, but we are Krishna's property. And we will never retract ourselves from that. And this is how we make spiritual progress, real spiritual progress. Because this is the path of Bhagavad Dharma. It is not Karma Kanda. It is not Kaitava Dharma. Srimad Bhagavatam kicks these things out from the very beginning. Dharma projita kayata vatra parama nirmat sadanam satam. People approach God thinking that it will improve the illusions around me. Bhagavad kicks these things out. Therefore, there are so many stories of devotees who are put in great difficulties. Look at the Pandavas, what's being explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mahabharata is a great, great history, but the Srimad Bhagavatam very specifically selects the parts of the Mahabharata which the Pandavas suffered the worst and amplifies and explains in great detail. of how the Pandavas surrender to Krishna under those circumstances. And then we see the life of Narada Rishi, a small child. His mother, she died, and she was a widow. He was a small child with no mother, no father, no relatives, no house, no anything. He was alone in the jungles. Did he give up his faith? With greater faith and determination, he sought Krishna's mercy. And then we have Dhruva. Dhruva was only 5 years old. He was terribly insulted, and he also left his palace and went to the forest, suffered a fate worse than death. But such determination he had for Krishna in that crisis in his life. Even when Narada Muni tried to test him, to convince him he should just go back and accept the problems that were along with his palace and live comfortably, he said, no, Krishna or nothing. Such determination. And what to speak of Prahlad, how many conditions he was, utterly helpless. Hiranyakashipu, he had no power to defend himself. All he had to do was just hide his devotion and just be polite to his father and agree with his father, and he would have been put on the throne as the king. What type of determination did Prahlad have? All he had to do was say, yes, father, you're right, and just keep his devotional attitudes to himself, and his father would have given him everything. He would have given him the throne of Indra and all the luxuries of life. But Prahlad was so determined to preach Krishna consciousness, he was willing to be rejected by his father, thrown in pits of snakes, fire, poison, attacked by deadly, horrible rakshasas. Such determination. Ambarish, terrible, terrible, fiery demon came to destroy him. All of these devotees never gave up their faith, even despite so many hardships. So the Srimad Bhagavatam separates those who are sincere and those who are insincere by the examples of what a real devotee is and what a real devotee strives to be. So here we find that Uttara, such a wonderful, chaste woman she was, when the fiery Brahmastra was coming to her womb, she was so selfless, so kind, so gentle, such a perfect mother, that she prayed, please, my Lord, if it is required, let this fiery arrow kill me, but protect this child in the womb. This is devotional service. Some people are under the illusion that being a good mother is a material attachment. Some people think that, oh, I should be doing so many sevas at the temple. It's Maya to take care of my child. This means you do not understand what is Krishna consciousness. Part of grihastha life, it is natural. If there is a desire to have children, you have children. But you do it for Krishna. And it is your sacred responsibility to Krishna to take care of that child physically, mentally, and spiritually. That is your service. And if you neglect that service, you neglect Krishna. Better to perform one's own duties, even imperfectly, than another's perfectly. If a mother neglects her child to go to do so many other services, that is not proper Krishna consciousness. And there will be a reaction. But of course we must understand that the Krishna conscious way to raise a child is to train the child to be a devotee by creating such a wonderful spiritual atmosphere, by giving such a beautiful spiritual example within one's own life that the child becomes naturally attracted to Krishna consciousness. And by showing the child the proper love and care by which the child is attracted to you and therefore is attracted to what you are giving them. That is the service of a mother. It is also the service of a father. This is not Maya. This is devotional service. It is immature and Maya to reject this principle unless you're in the renounced order of life. So, Uttara, she was such a great devotee of the Lord that she was willing to give up her own life to protect her child. Willingly. This is a mother. If you don't have this, you're not a mother at all. Not in the real sense of the term. And today, all over the world, the very virtue of a mother is being practically lost. Uttara never even saw her child. He was just an embryo in the womb, but still she had such motherly affection for him as a devotee. She was willing to give up her life for him. But today, in the West, in the East, there's not much difference anymore. Mothers, by and large, if there's a little inconvenience in having a child, they have the abortion. Almost half of the embryos in the womb are murdered in the United States of America. Over one third are killed. And this is the most heated debate within political circles. Abortion, pro-abortion, or anti-abortion. And this is one of the biggest, most important platforms to get votes. Whether you're for it or against it. Whether we should legalize a mother's right to kill her child or whether we should forbid it. And we see how people's consciousness is becoming more and more degraded. The current president of the United States of America, one of his main platforms was, yes, the mother has legal right to murder her baby. And if he didn't take that platform, he may not be president today. People think, yes, it's a free country. Free country. I'm free to do whatever I like in this way. Makes no sense. But if you want, if you are so materially motivated to your own sense gratification, then Krishna can convince you that it does make sense and give such determination that factually, in America, there are people who are willing to just give their lives in political campaigning, in physical protection to these clinics. They're willing to give their lives to protect the right of a woman to kill their child. And they're fighting ferociously to give more rights, more liberality to this. And here in India, it's almost just as bad. Everywhere you go, whether you're in the trains, you're seeing advertisements for discounts. They just treat it like you're getting haircut, discount. Come to my shop. Nothing more than that. To kill your own child. And mothers, they find out it's a girl instead of a boy. Kill it. I don't want it. This is Kali Yuga. Very advanced stages. Where a mother does not even see the sanctity or the sacredness of her relationship with her own child in the womb. In this way, humans have become less than animals. There is no animal that we know of that will not protect the child within the womb. There is no animal that we know of that after the baby is born, the mother will not protect it with her own life. Fight ferociously if necessary, even against all odds to protect. This is the basic motherly nature of the animals. But when human civilization becomes so attached to sense enjoyment and egoistic pursuits, we become so envious, we become far lower than the animal. For convenience sake, we kill. That's all it is. But Uttara, she was a lady with dignity. She was an example for all mothers. When her child was in danger and she saw that there was nothing she could do to protect it, she was just an innocent lady. And here comes this terrible Brahmastra flying right toward her womb. What could she do to protect her or to protect the child? So she turned to Krishna. She came running to Krishna. Please, Krishna, if you so desire, then let it kill me, but not my child, not my baby. She was willing to give her life in the mood of devotional service, because it is the mother's devotional service to protect and nourish a child. She didn't see that that child was hers. She saw that that child was Krishna's, and he's under my care, and I may take care of it, even if it means my own death, what to speak of some inconvenience. This is Krishna consciousness. And because of her great devotion, and because of the wonderful example she offered to her child, what did her child become? Maharaj Parikshit. What a service she rendered to the world by protecting such a boy. Srila Prabhupada explains that Sri Parikshit Maharaj, from his very, very early ages, there was such a Krishna-conscious atmosphere around him. Everyone was always talking about Krishna, chanting the names of Krishna. He was given deities to worship of Krishna. Then naturally he became a great devotee, such a great devotee, that by his power alone, the influence of Kali could not even enter into this world. So we should not think that a mother who is raising her child in Krishna consciousness is wasting her time. To bring such children like Parikshit Maharaj into the world is the supreme most greatest investment. But if a mother becomes simply materially attached, and doesn't keep good sadhana in her own life, doesn't keep good satsang with devotees in her own life, and she doesn't even give the child a chance to be Krishna conscious. That is also a total neglect in duty. On one level, if we neglect the child for our so-called Krishna consciousness, we are sinfully neglecting our duty. And if in order to just take care of the physical conditions of the child, we neglect our own Krishna consciousness, we neglect Krishna consciousness at all, we're also neglecting our duty. It's not one way or the other. Very honest and sincere in his devotional service to create an atmosphere of the spiritual world around the child. And to always also very, very carefully protect and to administrate whatever needs there are for the child to feel secure and loved in Krishna consciousness in this world. This is the service of a mother. This is the service of a devotee, accepting that role. And Uttara is here illustrating the most wonderful example. She's petitioning and praying to Krishna to save her child. But of course, even when there's not a Brahmastra weapon directly aimed at our child, coming at it, we should know that the forces of Maya and Kali are like so many Brahmastra weapons attacking our children through the propaganda of atheistic education, through the propaganda of sense gratification everywhere, anywhere, in the form of television, music, and so many other forms, intoxications. These are Maya's Brahmastras coming to destroy the spirituality of your child. Also coming to destroy your own spirituality. Therefore, a mother or a father knows that I cannot alone save my children from all of this. It's too powerful. So therefore, it is the parent's prime duty in life, like Uttara, to helplessly surrender to Krishna and say, please, my Lord, only you can save this child. Please protect. I'm willing to give my life for you. I'm willing to give my life in your service. But please protect. And Krishna, who so wonderfully appears within his name, is there to protect us when we sincerely call out, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Is there any questions?
It's not wrong to have a child, and the first thing is we have to see to it that it's a devotional service to have a child, but at the same time you have to always see to it that you are not compromising your daily sadhana, to see to it that you give the fullest thing to the child. But it has been almost observed from our past experience, that those grihasthas, let us be very frank enough, that those grihasthas, those who come into Krishna consciousness, before they were having a child, they were very sincere, they could give everything to Krishna consciousness. But after that, when they have a child, they have to compromise their daily sadhana. And once they compromise their daily sadhana, we have seen it, that the child is also not being given the full protection or full Krishna consciousness things. At the same time, the parents also are somewhat sliding behind in Krishna consciousness.
So going to that experience, what should be our first aim and goal? Should be the first aim and goal is to be seeing that we
ourselves, first of all, make a very strong base in our daily sadhana and compromise of having such a big... By giving the child also Krishna consciousness, when we ourselves is having a problem to maintain our sadhana itself.
First of all, for a mother, raising the child is a part of her sadhana. For the father, the ordinary principles of sadhana should not be compromised. For a mother, it becomes a part of the sadhana, providing they're trying to create a spiritual atmosphere around the child. And if we are sincere, you will try your best, even if you are a mother. You should not become just so materially infatuated and attached that you forget your duty to the child to give it Krishna. And it is not necessary that by having a child one necessarily falls into Maya. After all, so many of the greatest acharyas in the Grihastha ashram had children. Bhakti Vinod had 10 children. Advaita Acharya had 6 children. Nityananda Prabhu also had 2 children. Srivas also had children. Shivananda Sen also had children. They're great souls. They were setting an example of how to raise a child in Krishna consciousness. So we should take examples from them. We should not take examples from those who become so enamored that they justify the situation to fall into Maya just because they have a child. We're supposed to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. We're supposed to take the example of the great souls. We're not supposed to follow in the footsteps or take the examples of those who are not so sincere. So yes, there are examples of both. But who are we to follow? In Grihastha life, it's natural to have children. Nowhere in the scriptures does it say that Grihastha should not have children. It doesn't say that they have to, but it's natural. And therefore, if a Grihastha has a child, if he's actually Grihastha, he'll create an entire Krishna conscious environment around that child. And if he's a Grihamedi, he'll just try to create all sorts of material arrangements for sense gratification around the child. So your question of the fear that you'll lose your Krishna consciousness in sadhana, yes, if you follow in the footsteps of those who are insincere, you will. But if one follows in the footsteps of those who are actually setting a proper example, those who are sincere, no doubt it's an added austerity in life. To raise a child in Krishna consciousness is a great austerity. But it's also very dear to Krishna. It's a worshipable service to Krishna if we do it properly. You see, raising children is a long-term investment. You don't get immediate results. Uttara's raising of Maharaj Parikshit was a long-term investment. When he grew up,
what type of a devotee he was.
And this world needs great devotees, not only in this generation, but in future generations also. So it is an illusion to think that it's Maya or it's materialistic. It is if you have the wrong consciousness. But if you have the proper consciousness, it's part of the devotional service of a grihastha.
They have given the best thing to the children. Then you see the results. Prabhupada's children have not become a devotee. The Advaita Acharya's children, I have rather been told that there were some of them are so the Mayavadis. Then how this thing has happened when they have given the life and soul to the children, they've given the full investment or whatever you say is a long-term investment, but they didn't materialize as such. Is it not a waste of time to give so much time to them and afterwards the result is completely nullified?
Neha vikramanasosti pratyavayo navajjite svalpamapyasi dharmasya trayate mahatopayat.
Again, this is material vision. Any devotional service is never lost. No devotional service is a waste of time. If you are doing it in the proper way for Krishna, you're not supposed to be attached to the results. You're supposed to be attached to the service. If you're talking about Srila Prabhupada, yes, perhaps his children did not become as good a devotees as he expected them to be, but they will all be liberated because of his devotional service no matter what they do. And because he pleased Krishna so much through all of his endeavors in life of honestly trying to please Krishna in everything he did, how he was empowered to bring so many millions of people to Krishna consciousness. You cannot separate the overall endeavor of his life to the overall result of his mission. Do you understand? Similarly, you're speaking of Advaitacharya. Three sons were Mayavadis and three sons were great Vaishnavas. But those three sons headed by Achyutananda, he was so dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was such a perfect and wonderful devotee. He was a great acharya who liberated so many people of this world. So you cannot be attached to the results. You have to be attached to the service. But the same way in preaching. Srila Prabhupada also preached to so many devotees and put so much time and energy into their spiritual lives, and some of them left and fell completely into Maya again, temporarily. Does that mean we should give up preaching? Does that mean when somebody comes to our door and says, please help me, we should say no, because why should I invest so much time in you when you may leave after 5 or 6 years? You may bloop. So therefore, forget you. I'll do my sadhana. There's a risk. Having a child in this Krishna consciousness mission is a long-term preaching endeavor. And if you're doing it properly, you're making spiritual purification, you're setting a proper example, but you can't be attached to the fruits. Whether your child becomes a paramhamsa or whether your child becomes a demon, still you've done your job properly, you've set a good example for others, and you've pleased Krishna.
This is in addition to Anand Vrindavan's question, Maharaj. I wanted a clear understanding regarding this on a practical level. You have been emphasizing in most of your lectures, especially on your tour to Kolhapur and Belgaum, where he said that this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, he's been put into the custody of very few souls, and it is our duty to see that this mission is spreading. Like, it is up to us to see that this mission spreads more and more and more. And even in your Pune Vyas Puja lecture, you just mentioned that we should also try to give it to others what we have received from you. Now, as far as the service is concerned, Maharaj, for the grihasthas, of course, those who already have a child and who are beyond the age where they don't have to be really looked after much, it's all right. But for those who would like to have a child in the near future or planning to have a child, right now the services and all they may be doing is maybe to a greater extent. But then there is always a fear that after having a child, probably they may not be able to carry out this mission to that extent which they may be carrying it now, because it's like a state of emergency, urgency. What is the solution for this?
It is not the solution for everything, is Krishna consciousness. It is a matter of our sincerity. Having a child should be an increase in our service. It should not be an excuse to decrease our service. If we are deciding to have a child, it should be in the mood of increasing my service to Krishna, not justifying decreasing my service to Krishna. And in that increase, your service may not be exactly the same as it is now. There may be some changes in your service, but still it is service. Still, it is a part of this great mission. The overall mission is part of a very essential and important part of this mission, is to show the world how families could live together in Krishna consciousness and raise children in Krishna consciousness. The world is impressed by that. They will take our movement more seriously if they see that. If you fall into Maya, then you're not doing anything for anyone. But if you're actually sincere and you remain strict, you should understand that that is preaching. That is devotional service. That's a very important, essential part of our whole overall mission, to have examples living like this for the world to see. And it's pleasing to Krishna. So yes, for the father, there should be very little difference in devotional service before or after having a child. But for the mother, there may be a change in priorities to some extent. So we shouldn't see it as we're decreasing our service, but we should actually be seeing it, we're increasing our service with some changes in priorities of our overall service. If you're doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, you'll do it according to Krishna's instructions. If you're doing it for your sense gratification, you raise your child according to your own mental concoctions. And if we do it according to Krishna's instructions, coming through parampara, we should know that it's devotional service. And it's very pleasing to the Lord. And we shouldn't justify. That is a great danger. People do that in so many walks of life. They have a certain change in their life and they take that to justify becoming spiritually lazy. People do that, no doubt. But that doesn't mean we have to do that. We should not do that. Because even if you don't have a child, Maya will give you so many opportunities to become spiritually lazy if you want to follow in the footsteps of those. From the point of view of brahmacharis, there are brahmacharis who bloop. And there are brahmacharis who remain strict. So if you're a brahmachari, who are you going to follow in the footsteps of? There was propaganda against brahmacharis in this very temple by by some people living outside, coming to the temple, saying, Brahmacharya is maya, it's all useless, nobody should be a Brahmacharya. Look! And they keep citing the same two or three examples of Brahmacharis who blooped. You see, it's useless. They can't stay. They can't do it. No one should be a Brahmacharya. This person left. And he left Krishna consciousness. And he complains that it was too austere for him. And there are Brahmacharis who think, yes, if he can't do it, how can I do it? I'll leave too. So are you going to follow those examples, or are you going to follow the examples of those who are very sincere, very humble, and who stay? So as grihasthas, we can follow the example of this grihastha who had a baby and just became so emotionally attached that they gave up their Krishna consciousness to a large extent. Or we can follow the examples of those grihasthas who actually may have had some changes in service, but they're raising their children in Krishna consciousness and they're doing wonderful service and wonderful work and giving a proper example. So who do you want to follow? That is your choice. In every situation, there are good examples and bad examples. And just by citing the bad examples, you're not going to make much progress. We have to cite the good examples. Somebody who's about to come into this Brahmacharya ashram could think, here is Radhe Shyam, Tattva, Shyamananda, Radha Gopinath, such nice devotees, I want to be like them. Or they could also come and say, here's this person, that person, and this person who there are, I'm not going to mention their names, how they got frustrated and left. So I don't want to join this ashram. There's not much difference. If you're grihasthas, follow the examples of good grihasthas and be encouraged. If you're a brahmachari, you follow the example of the good brahmacharis and be encouraged. What to speak of sannyas? There are many sannyasis who left. And there are many sannyasis who are doing wonderful service. So if your Guru Maharaj asks you take sannyas, are you going to say, well, all those people left, so why should I do it? Or we could think, but all these people who are doing so nicely, I will follow them. So in every ashram, there's those who follow Maya's path and those who follow Krishna conscious path. And we have our choice who we're going to follow. Mahajano yena gatasa panta. We follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. And of the Mahajans, there are brahmacharis, sannyasis, and grihasthas. If you're in the renounced order, you will follow Mahajans like Shukadeva Goswami, Narada Muni. If you're in the Grihasthasham, you'll follow Mahajans like Brahma, Shiva, Prahlad, Swayambhuva Manu. So there are Mahajans in each order. We have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, before asking question, let me tell you, I'm not trying to escape myself from sadhana bhakti. Hmm? This is the question which was suddenly arise in my mind. So we have heard, Maharaj, that if in family, if there is even one pure devotee, he can take all of his family members back to Godhead. And again, in last answer, you gave example of Prabhupada. So when we see one devotee, he take initiation from a genuine bona fide spiritual master, he's establishing relationship with him, and that relationship with spiritual master is higher relationship than any relationship in this mundane world. So a devotee can take all of his family members back to Godhead even if they are not devotee. So what happens, one who is sincerely trying but still he could not complete devotional service, but because he has having relationship with spiritual master, on the strength of spiritual master, Is it possible for
him? It is a matter of our sincere endeavor. We should know that initiation in itself doesn't mean anything. Real initiation does not mean getting a name, sitting in front of a fire, and throwing some grains in the fire. That is not initiation. There are many people who get initiated who never got initiated. Not really. It's not something cheap. But in Kali Yuga, everyone wants something cheap. Prabhupada said, don't try to keep your guru like your dog. Don't think your guru is just a picture to put on the wall and say, this is my guru. It's the way most people are. What does initiation mean? It means the willingness to surrender to your life, to following the instructions of the guru. If you're not willing to do that, initiation is a farce. It means nothing. And we should never encourage anyone to get initiated unless they're willing to live their life sincerely to follow the instructions. It's better to remain a congregational devotee without initiation. So when you say initiated by a spiritual master, if you're really initiated, you're really living your life, getting initiated means following the four regular principles strictly. If you're not following the four regular principles strictly in this sampradaya and you get initiated, it's a farce. It means nothing. If you're not willing to chant 16 rounds every day, it's a farce. It means nothing. It's show bottle. It's nonsense. We're not concerned with such show bottle, nonsense, cheap things. We're concerned with something with substance. You're not going to go back to Godhead because you're initiated. You're going to go back to Godhead because you surrender to Krishna through surrendering to His pure devotees, through the parampara. And part of the process of that surrender is to accept initiation. But it's not the end of itself. To initiate means to begin. It's beginning a higher realm of surrender if you do it right. If you don't do it right, it doesn't mean anything. If you're not willing to put your own ego aside to hear from the words of your guru and follow, then forget about initiation. Initiation means a formal vow that I'm going to put my ego aside and I'm going to humbly follow you throughout my life with faith. And if someone is actually living according to that principle, he'll make real spiritual advancement. And whatever spiritual matters you make, all of those connected to you will share the benefits of your spiritual advancement. And eventually you will become a pure devotee. Definitely. And at that time, all of your descendants and all of your forefathers will be liberated. For so many generations. Whether you're a grihastha or brahmacharya, it doesn't matter. You do have forefathers. They'll all be liberated. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.